If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. With over a decade of traditional teaching, Ade Hoffman traded fluorescent lights for sunshine. For the past 6 years, she's been redefining early childhood education for children, educators, caregivers, and parents. Her philosophy is simple. Living is learning, and play is an essential right for all. She believes in teaching educators to embrace observation and to incorporate nature into uninterrupted play. She's here to help you shake things up and disrupt early childhood education for the better. She's flipped the script on early childhood education, the way it's supposed to look and sound and feel like. And now she's here to tell us more. Without further ado, Ade Hoffman. Hello, everybody. We are here with Ade Hoffman. She is from Nature Play All Day. Welcome, Ade.
Hello. Thank you.
Welcome. So this, for all of those that are listening, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that we are here with Ade with some of her most magnificent pictures of her program. So if you are a Circle member, you can go to our Circle platform and you can find all our tour and talks there. So you get sort of an inside view of her program. So Ade, I'm so excited. Your pictures are absolutely gorgeous. So I cannot wait to get started to learn about your story because it's fascinating. So welcome again.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story before entering this world of Nature Play All Day?
Yeah, absolutely. My story is much like any other in early childhood. I started in my late teenage years working in a preschool or a daycare setting, like a traditional setting. And I just loved it. I thought, oh, this is easy. I'm just playing with children. And I started there. And then I just gradually fell in love and actually didn't know that I fell in love with teaching children until I left that job for, you know, something more adult, like in an office and, you know, trying to check those kind of proverbial boxes. And every time I left, I missed it. And I just wanted to come back. And so I did. And finally, oh gosh, I don't know what year it was, but it was in my mid-20s. I was like, you know, this is so silly. I love doing this. Like, why don't I just go back to school, get my master's degree, and like actually do something here? And so I went back to the last place that I was working at, which was a daycare in Connecticut. It's where I was born and raised. And I went back there while I was in grad school and obtained my early childhood degree, my master's degree in special education. And I also have like a minor in art history. So it's an interesting way to see how that kind of flows. But anyway, I went back, got my degree, and then I just kind of had like a little bit of a rub from every program that I was in. I was like, you know, this could be done like a little bit differently. And I was always kind of doing things a little bit like naughty. Like I was going outside more than I was supposed to be going outside. I was like kind of going into different places that we weren't like supposed to be. And I was just not following my schedule because it's not what the kids wanted to do. But I was just taking their lead, which is what I do now. So once I got my degree, I kind of was like, you know what? I'm gonna move. I moved to Texas in 2016, and I was back in the conventional classroom at a charter school there. And you know, thank God for that because it really opened my eyes to where I needed to be, which was outdoors with children. Mm. It was a really heartbreaking experience. but I'm just so grateful for it. I ended up leaving there before the school year ended. I took a volunteer position at a local nature center, and they had a preschool program a half day. And I was like, listen, I just want to be outside with kids. Just hire me on for free. And yeah. So they did. And I mean, the rest is kind of history.
The rest is history.
It started much like everybody else. I just was, you know, working with kids because it seemed, quote, easy to do. But it really was just, it was my calling. It was what I was, it's what I was meant to do. So that's why it felt so easy.
Yeah. And so now you have this incredible school of your own called Nature Play All Day. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're going to be looking at today and digging in deeper. I would love for you to share a little bit about how you found this property and just the, we're looking at just some of the spaces that, the learning spaces that you have in on this incredible property that you found. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure what didn't happen overnight. So there's a lot, you know, but can you?
Goodness, no. Yeah, I could kind of give you the abridged version. This has been really like a 10-year journey, if I'm being frank. And we moved to Maine from Texas in 2017. I took a job at a place-based school here in Maine. You know, it wasn't the position that I wanted, but I was like, you know, I just want to be in an environment that is nature-based so I can kind of figure out what this is all about because I didn't know. I mean, I was going outside in winter in Maine for the first time in a while wearing like my snowboarding gear from high school. So I didn't know how to dress. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff, but I knew I needed a stepping stone to learn. And so I took that position and I was really, really lucky to find that position. And I was there for 4 years. And I knew, even in my interview for that job, you know, they where do you see yourself in a few years? And well, I'll be running my old program. And they were like, what? Well, yeah. We're going to hire you. And I was like, yes, but I'm just going to, like, I have a plan. And we were just kind of quietly looking for the right spot and nothing quite fit. It didn't feel quite right. It was too far away from home. And where we live is pretty rural. And so everything is really far away. But I was, you know, we looked for a very, very long time. And I actually found this property just a few weeks after I left the program I co-founded without a plan. Like I knew I wanted to start my own program solo, but I didn't have a location. I had no idea. I didn't have funding secured, nothing. And this property popped up on Facebook Marketplace one night while I was just scrolling. And I messaged the seller and, you know, it's amazing how things work, right? And so he says, oh, you know, we have showings at 10 o'clock. I'm like, great, I'll be there at 9. And so I just kind of like took control, which is not actually shocking if you get to know me a little bit. But and we fell in love with the property. I told the seller what my vision was. He also fell in love with that idea. And then we just hit the ground running once we got some funding underway. But there was nothing on the property. The top part, which you see here in this slide where the yurt classroom is, that was just already cleared. And we came in and did all the earthwork, the plumbing and all of that. I wanted that to be like a fully functional building. So it felt more comfortable for children that everyone likes to use an outhouse. So I wanted to make sure I had that. It was, you know, an extra expense, but I knew it was a level of comfort that would really help children adjust in the long run. So
it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, we just used the property as it was. And some of these pictures that you're showing now are from base camp. That's where we spend most of our day. We've got a little dome down there. It's now just a frame. All the plastic has kind of come off. We're problem solving that. But we started with a 16x20 canvas wall tent. And now we have a forest cottage down there. But none of it was what I was wanting initially. And I was just like, this is what we've got. This is what we can do. And it's been a huge learning curve and just kind of going with the flow and using what you've got. So I'm very, very grateful for having, you know, the space and the timing and the support and all of that.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. So the title of your school is Nature Play All Day. So I can just hear voices in my head and people going, well, how did they learn how play? There's all this messaging and the importance of play now and children should be playing. But there's also this pushback in terms of how are kids going to learn through play? So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your daily schedule and why you chose Nature Play All Day in terms of your name.
Yeah, we are child-led and adult-supported. And I just believe so strongly. It was a powerful moment for me back in 2017 when I was starting to transition out of a conventional teaching position into more of a child-led environment. And you'll never forget the moment where I realized, like, oh, we are here if they need us, but I'm not orchestrating any of the learning or any of the meaningful learning, I should say. And I realized very quickly that when the children were engaged in play and following what I call their play intuition or their intrinsic motivation, that's when their brains were the stickiest. That's when they were learning the most. That's when they were building the most like contextual knowledge and like taking them with that, like into places I never could have imagined in their learning, you know, journey and process. So it was really important to me when I set foot out on this new journey to make sure that the children were leading. And so when me and the mouse in my pocket, like made this schedule, I was remembering those early days transitioning from conventional classroom to this child-led environment. And I think it was around maybe after my first year of teaching outdoors, I kind of did this experiment where I counted up all of the time, added up all of the time that we were accounting for transitions in our schedule. And it was over 2.5 hours of transitions. And I thought to myself, wow, what a waste of time. We are not even, we're taking away all this rich, valuable time from the children. And so, you know, those two things really stuck with me when I founded the program. And so our schedule is completely built around children exploring and playing all day long, hence the name Nature Play All Day. I much prefer to be outside with children rather than inside. You know, Aaron Kinney said it best, like, you can't bounce off the walls if there are none. And so it's just such a beautiful, if you've not experienced being outside for an extended period of time with children, with hardly any transitions, please put yourself in a position to do that. You can come visit my school and do it because it's transformative for sure. But we start our day with a staggered open-ended drop-off so that families don't have to feel rushed to get there right at 8:30. They can come all the way up to like 9:15. And then once everyone arrives, we just have a quick gathering. I just sing and we get in a circle. We share any urgent burning news that children may have, which is very hilarious. And then we head down from the yurt classroom to base camp and we spend our whole day there. And all we really do is just kind of go back and forth between eating, playing, going to the bathroom, eating, playing, and like
I love that
over and over and over again until it's time to close out. But it's that simple.
Yeah. I absolutely love these two pictures of just you have this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's these curtains that are hung by two trees and you've got, it's sort of this, I don't even know, you'd have to see it to describe it.
Yeah, it's like just, a little puppet theater.
Puppet theater. Yeah, it's beautiful. So again, you've been talking about unstructured play and how vital it is in terms of children's development, and these various different pictures really emulate what you are doing at your program. Can you describe a little bit of what's happening here?
This is, you know, a lot of people ask me like, well, what do you need? Do you have to bring a lot of stuff with you if you're going to go out into nature? And the picture on the left, the children are engaged in this forest puppy play, which I don't know how it is, but it's just a reoccurring theme across the years with children. But this is what's happening all on their own. They're forest puppies. They've created this silk house. And silks is one thing. And clothespins that I always suggest that people have like just like a little tote, like a travel bag or tote with. And you could bring this anywhere, even if you have a traveling program that meets at a nature center or something like that, or some preserved land. But they're making a silk house for themselves. It's a mixed age here. I think the oldest child here is 6.5 and the youngest is 2.5. And they've created a little ramp from loose parts and hung silks up. I had run a rope around a kind of cluster of trees and then they've pinned it all together. One child has actually created this very elaborate outfit out of the silks in this photo as well. And that particular day was very, very warm. I don't know how she did it, but she wore it all day, like many, many layers. And she was just as happy as can be.
Oh, I love that. And here kids are just, they're working with big tool. I just noticed that.
They're using the loppers.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I love that cross body movement, right? That fosters pre-writing skills, pre-reading skills, core engagement, hand-eye coordination, all that stuff. We use the loppers all the time. I've got a little, like a shorter set for like hedges. And then I've got the big set that normally, you know, you kind of maybe used to seeing, but I found that shorter set at Ocean State Job Lot over the summer. And we've got several pairs of those.
So wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, it's just, and there's no adults around and it's very loose and it's very mm-hmm. messy and it's very, these pictures just, I can hear the joy and the laughter of the children as they're playing. And so messaging that to parents, and they obviously come to you and they know what to expect, but is there any communication that you need to, or teaching in terms of educating parents and families about the essence of nature-based education?
Sometimes I think a lot of people seek out, or more people now than I think ever are seeking out programs like this because they have heard and known about the benefits. But I sometimes continue to educate through newsletters. Like I'll pick one particular theme. Maybe it's just, you know, like the puppy dog play. And I'll just highlight that in a newsletter and just kind of lay out some of the developmental benefits for their growing bodies and brains and just educate that way. But there's a ton of buy-in from the beginning. I mean, parents, many of the parents that are having children in this program, they've had a childhood like this still. Like that's still tangible in the memory of the parents. And I think that's really helpful because they want that also for their children. And I think just in general, people are seeing that that's kind of disappearing a little bit. And so if they can have a hand in facilitating that for their child, they're, you know, they're invested. So, yeah. But I do some education. It's mostly through the newsletters and, you know, documenting and just showing them what they're doing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This picture, I, throughout the whole pictures that we had, that you've sent in are, I've really noticed during the colder months that the kids are all beautifully dressed appropriately. So kudos to that. And it's just, they all look so comfortable and happy in their gear. And that's always such a big component to nature-based education and actually staying outside for longer.
They do amazing with the gear. They're way more capable than I think we maybe give them credit for. And they don't need as much as we think they do. That's the other part is like, you'll notice in some of those pictures that like, they're just wearing just, they have like winter bibs on and, you know, a thermal and a hat. Like a they're hat. Moving like so the key, much.
Yeah.
They don't need to be like, you know, Randy from A Christmas Story. Like they, right, they can
right,
just,
right.
they can be able to, as long as they're able to move their bodies, they're going to be able to stay warm for sure.
Beautiful. So curriculum. So how do you're emergent. How do you, again, weigh in on all of this? You're really leaning into following the child and taking yourself out of that scenario. So do you follow a certain curriculum? Do you set that up? And it's also sounds like your groups are mixed age. How mm-hmm. does that work with learning and a curriculum?
Well, I don't follow like a boxed or canned curriculum. It's all emergent. So every year is always different because every cohort is different. And I do a lot of just documentation and observation. And it's kind of become like a game for me. It's like, oh, I see that this child spent a lot of time pouring and dumping. Like, what does that tell me? And so you go to the early learning standards. Every state's got them. And I just like to play like a match game and share them through the newsletters that way. Because, you know, living is learning. I don't need some person I never met to write a curriculum for me about right. children that they've never met. And the children are just learning through existing in a space, as we see all the time out in the world. They're investigating and experimenting and all of that. But yeah, I don't follow a specific curriculum, but we do align ourselves with an emergent curriculum. And so that can look different on every other day. It also takes a lot of pressure off of me planning wise. And I love that. I have spent many hours planning weeks ahead at different schools. And it's, you know, you do all this planning and all this, you know, scheming and then nothing happens with it. And so, you know, I think it's a much more productive use of time to be in the moment with children and just be like, you know what, I noticed they're really into smashing ice. So I'm just going to put out a few extra hammers and safety glasses today and see what happens. Yeah. And so it's mostly provocations based on what we observe the children are interested in, you know, over the course of the week, seasons, et cetera.
Yeah, so much exploration. I mean, you're again, a picture has 1,000 words and your pictures just truly really speak in terms of what children are doing and how engrossed they are in every single picture. They're completely engrossed in what they're doing. Do you do any sort of themes with seasons or anything like that? Or is it just completely where the children are coming from?
I'm not into themes personally. I think themes emerge naturally with children. I advertise Forest Camp as their summer programming, that each theme has like a week focus. So like the first week we did outdoor cooking, and that's helpful because you're getting a bunch of kids who've never been there before, but they develop their own theme. Like the puppy dog play, the forest puppies, that went on all summer. Like even with kids that were new and never met the previous forest puppies, they just carried it on. We have like a theme of mystery with the forest gnomes that leave us letters and, you know, trinkets and things. So they're setting traps for them, and they've like developed this theme of like good guy, bad guy, like Mr. Nobody is the bad guy and the gnomes are the good guy. Like they create all of that themselves just by us dropping some mysterious thing with a note on it. They really facilitate all of it. You know, it's the best feeling when you're like, oh, there they go. They don't need me. Yeah. They might need me for a magic salve or a Band-Aid or, you know, something like that. But they're just so beautifully capable.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Can you share any memorable experiences of your success stories of student learning? I mean, you've shared so many. Do you have any others?
Yeah, a lot of people ask, you know, are they going to be ready if they go from a program like ours to a public school system or, you know, a more conventional learning environment? And I have heard from many, many families that do that, that the children that enroll in a more traditional setting or conventional setting are like far beyond what is being expected. They're not behind at all. Like that myth is, you know, proven to be false right away. Their vocabulary is incredibly robust, and they have a ton of contextual knowledge because they've had all this free, uninterrupted time to explore, you know, ideas of physics and science and weather and logistics and engineering and all of that. And so I think there's a concern among families that might be quiet at first. Like, are they going to be ready if I decide to not do the homeschooling route, or if I decide to not do this, or if I just delay kindergarten 1 year, is that actually going to be problematic? And it's actually wildly beneficial. I find that families are very pleased and children are becoming much more confident in their journeys in learning and just like how they move through the world. They know themselves so, so well. Like they know when it's time to go to the bathroom, I don't have to remind them. They know when their body is hungry. They know what happens to them when they feel thirsty. Like it's just outstanding to see like how independent they become and how they can advocate for themselves on all the levels, emotionally, socially, physically, all of that. I think it's just important to mention that, you know, that is a legitimate concern, is like, will my child be ready if they're just playing for this whole year? And the answer is they're going to be like beyond ready. It's kind of like, I like to say that when you add nature and play-based education into your child's experience, it's like cooking with real butter and like homegrown eggs. It's just more, it's tastier, it's richer. So yeah, I think just as a general success story, I think that is important to mention.
Ah, brilliant. I love that. It's just we're seeing pictures of kids sort of sliding around on the ice. Mm-hmm. Just again, I love how you speak about really leaning into just their experience and taking ourselves us as adults mm-hmm. out of the equation, and so they can truly stand on their own two feet and really actually. I loved how you were just speaking about how to listen to their own bodies, as opposed mm-hmm. to looking at us in terms of it, like if a child falls, they kind of wait and see if anybody saw that or if they're going to get help from anybody. So right. Yeah, these beautiful, beautiful pictures with nature-based education and teaching outdoors, especially in your program, you are in the woods and all being outside for different seasons and being up in Maine. How do you deal with challenges like just weather conditions, safety concerns in an outdoor program, and what recommendations would you give?
I would first highly recommend gear. Gear is like it's a huge investment. There are grants available. I know like Maine Early Childhood Outdoors is a gear grant every year. There's other grants available as well. But if you don't have the gear, like your logistics are just going to feel overwhelming. So gear, I would say, is the bridge to like actually making this feel successful, not only for us as the adults and the facilitators, but for the children as well. We have a gear rental program at our program, but we also have a huge lending library because life happens and sometimes you need a new snowsuit and you only have one. So I've just accumulated them over the years through thrift stores, Facebook Marketplace, things like that. And also we host a gear exchange every year, and then what doesn't get taken, we just put into our own library. But I would say gear is really important. I do have a gear guide. I think I shared that link with you, but it is important for us to be dressed appropriately and the children. And then in my gear guide, I go through the layers and like why those layers are important and like when to shed them and when not and why to use cotton and why not use a cotton and all of that. But I think if you can get a handle on the gear, the weather is not a problem. I think the weather is big and scary. It's not really a barrier unless it's highly dangerous, like lightning or high winds, because then we're just not in the forest. And some days we've canceled school when, you know, the regular school district is open, we close because I'm not just going to stand in an open field for 6.5 hours. Like that doesn't feel productive. So I think to navigate those challenges, I would educate myself around gear and accumulate gear whenever I could and however I can. I love to work with people on that. And then being aware of the weather, but also not being afraid of it. So like once you know what it's like to be outside in a 10 degree day, you know, it's not that bad if you're sledding all day. You know, you have to kind of have the experience and be gentle with yourself. You know, the first year that I was outside teaching, it was overwhelming, but I had many days where I was like, oh, this actually like, you know, on my app, it seems very dangerous. It's like -4 in February, but the kids are as happy as can be. No one's getting frostbite. Like everyone's appropriately dressed and feeling good. So and, I think it's just getting some of those experiences under our belt is a helpful way to, you know, navigate that.
I love it when that happens. Your oiled machine is well oiled and it just, all of a sudden you look out and it's like everybody's figured it out. It takes a while to get there, like you said, but when it does, it's like, oh.
It's so worth the days where you're like, oh my gosh, this is mitten madness. it's so worth it.
Oh, and geez, these learning spaces are absolutely, this is amazing. This little hut, teepee hut.
Yeah, that little stick house. The children, they built that. I offer a free play group on Fridays. And for a while, that was the only program that I was facilitating because I didn't have any enrollment. And the children built that. And families it's together over the course of like a year. Yeah, it's just so sweet.
It's huge. I mean, it's got some substance to it. Oh my goodness. Your pictures are gorgeous.
Well, thank you.
So again, we've already talked about answering that question, you know, play all day. Can you share what's going on in some of these pictures?
Sure. I love that this one is in here. The picture on the left is some children and I at playgroup actually. Filling the bird feeders. And I like to offer bird feeders as an entry point for people who want more nature-based experiences for their cohort or their program. It is a huge part. We've paused because we've had a bear in the area, but it's a huge, huge part of the, you know, quote, curriculum. This is part of our everyday, you know, routine. Let's check the feeders. Let's fill the feeders. And there's just so much rich learning happening through that one experience. Like, and it changes from season to season, you know, why suet in the winter, you know, you get to learn all these different things just through having bird feeders. So, I always invite people to bring feeders into their outdoor spaces or even right outside of their indoor spaces to help bring that in if they are just looking to start to bring more nature-based stuff into their rhythms and routines. But yeah, that we're feeding the birds there. And then on the right, there's two children climbing. I don't know who is in the back there, but I can't see their face. But it's probably maybe a 2-year-old and or 3-year-old and a 5-year-old climbing a tree. And I mean, that's another example. The learning that's happening and the pre-reading and writing skills, like the grasp and the core strength and the hand-eye coordination and the crossing the midline, all of that's happening when they're just climbing up 2 or 3 branches. The confidence building at the beginning of the year, many children can't reach the first branch. I never pick a kid up to put them in the tree. If you can't get in, you're not going to be able to get out on your own. So, and vice versa. If you've gotten up there, you can get down. I'll be here and walk you through it and talk you through it. Yeah, climbing, and I mean, these are all things that you don't need to bring in, right? These are just things that you can do low cost or no cost. There's trees everywhere, and some are better than others for climbing. But these are really both beautiful examples of entry points of like how rich the learning is just by being outside and bringing nothing to the table, really.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So again, you talked about rhythms of your day. We've talked a little bit about not interrupting play. Is there these moments where you want to interrupt, or what were some of the things that you needed to teach yourself to not be engaged in children's play? Because it's sort of
a really great question.
Knee-jerk reaction of, you know, I also see parents that want to play with their children. They want to have that experience with them. How do you respond to that?
Well, I've definitely been there. Those early days of when I was starting to teach here in Maine, I found myself interrupting play a ton because it's what I was taught to do. Like, get down low and like check in and say, you know, what are you working on? Tell me more. And sometimes I still do that, but I really had to kind of train myself to trust two things. First, that I've modeled what it is like to move through an environment safely. And the second is that children actually can do challenging and riskful things. This picture here, there's a child. It looks very precarious. They've got some loose parts stacked up on a wooden spool with a long piece of wood. They've made a ramp, and it's narrow. It's probably about 3 inches, if that, and maybe 2 inches wide. And they went up and down that at outrageous speeds. So, but like at first, I would want to step in and be like, that doesn't look safe. But I would have to just kind of walk myself through, like, are there any hazards? Like, what happens if they do fall off? Like, is it really that dangerous? Or am I kind of escalating it because I don't want to, you know, have a hard conversation with the children, a child's parent? Of course, you don't want the child to get hurt. But also, like, when children fall, like, they're so squishy and, like, relaxed. They're not actually, like, putting themselves in a position to get hurt, especially from where they are in that particular picture. But what I practiced is what in the early days was I would literally, like, bite my lip and take 2 steps backwards and then just count to 10 and just be like, okay, they made it through 10 seconds. Let me just see. Like, I'm on the edge of my seat the whole time, but it's, like, the best show, right? So, and over time and, you know, collecting all those reps of seeing that children actually are capable, you just begin to realize that it's you that's getting in the way of this beautiful learning experience. And then we unpack that for any length of time. I literally just take a few steps backwards and just count to like 10 or 12 or whatever. Just Brilliant. Give yourself a tiny chunk of time, unless there's like massive hazards in place. But, you know, in the terms of like climbing as well, there have been times where kids have gotten just too high for my comfort. And I would just name that and say, hey, you know what? I see that you've gotten up there really beautifully, but I feel worried. And I feel it in my belly. Can you come down a little bit? Or, you know, you draw attention to the size of the branches. But it's all about communication with yourself, but also with the children. And then just seeing how that plays off of each other.
Just in terms of your program and your surround, you said you're in sort of, you know, you're in the woods, you're in a desolate area. Do you tap into your community at all? Utilize your community? Does the community come into you? How does that work?
Yeah, I actually feel like I wouldn't exist without community because I got my childcare licensed in June of 2024. But I had no enrollments. So as soon as I got our license, I opened up a free nature play group. And that is what made us, like, put us on the map. The play group now is, I mean, this many people aren't coming at once, but the group has grown to over 100 families and children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every week we have at least 5 families with multiple children, and they're, you know, contributing to summer programming. They've helped volunteer. They are part of my staff. They've also contributed things like fruits and vegetables from their farm, animals, to come and visit. So we wouldn't exist, I think, without our community. And part of my mission with this program is to be rooted in community, because it's not just about childcare. I actually just had this conversation with a prospective family yesterday. This is not a program just for your kid to come from 8:30 to 3. This is a program for you all to engage with and enjoy and feel supported. Because it is a journey to send your child somewhere. And, you know, there's a lot of big things happening for, you know, parents and families when they send a child. And so often families that come, they say, like, I don't want to miss playgroup. Like, the adult doesn't want to miss playgroup. They look forward to that because life is busy and full. And this is 2 hours every Friday where, like, literally nothing else is happening. We have terrible phone service down at base camp. So, you know, they're not interrupted. They're able to connect with their child if they want that, like you mentioned earlier, to play with their child. And and that's their time. And that's really very special. And I value that and revere that greatly. So I think community is why we're on the map and a big part of who we are as a program here in Maine.
Beautiful. So yes, you talk a lot about flipping the script in terms of what early child education is supposed to look like, what it's supposed to sound like and feel like. And I think you've really emulated that just looking at your space in the winter here and these beautiful, beautiful pictures. Just absolutely look at that. They look so happy and so healthy and working together. And they look like they're making a big snow person, a big ball there. If you were to give one seed of inspiration or tip to an educator or a parent, what would that be?
I think to just trust your gut, and also trust your child, because they know what they need. Just because they're little doesn't mean we have to decide for them. I would just say that, you know, leaning into trust and discomfort is going to do a huge, you know, it's going to be hugely beneficial for everybody involved. It can be scary for sure. I've had lots of conversation with parents who are like, you know, I want my child to be engaged in more risk, but I don't know how to do that. So ask for help, ask for support, or just vocalize to your child, if nothing else, like, this makes me uncomfortable. Is there a way that we could do it that makes me feel a little bit more comfortable? That is a great and easy place to start. But I am so happy to work with parents and educators, like homeschooling families and educators, to facilitate more of this in their program. In fact, that's like the other half of my business is mentorship. So it's my absolute joy and pleasure to walk through these really hard seasons of growing. We're all growing. It's not just the children, right? We're all growing every single day. So I would say just trust yourself. If you think it's a good idea, but you're like, I don't know, like, just wait a minute and see. I think, you know, you're going to receive more and collect more evidence that it actually is hugely beneficial, and just it's the right thing to do.
Oh, Aide, it's just, you speak so eloquently and clearly through your pictures and your program that you have an incredible passion for this work. And the families that are in your program and care, and anybody that walks across your path, I'm so thrilled that our paths have crossed. And I'm just so grateful for that. So with that, if I haven't missed anything, where can folks find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram. I am also on Facebook, but I never go there. My handle is at Nature Play All Day, all lowercase, all one word. It's the easiest place to find me. You can see more about my program and other things that I'm offering, courses and trainings and workshops. And then, of course, you can always just send me a personal note at natureplayallday@gmail.com. I love to receive letters through email. So if you know, ever want to start a conversation or just have a question, I'm happy to hop on a call or, you know, exchange an email. So those are the two easiest places to find me. And of course, if you're in Maine, you can come find me at school.
Thank you so much, Aide. And look forward to following up at some point. Thanks so much.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Before we sign off, we have an exciting opportunity for educators looking to bring learning to life outdoors. Consider enhancing your teaching journey with the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program empowers educators to transform any outdoor space into a dynamic, learning environment. By joining, you'll gain skills to inspire students and foster a deeper connection with the natural world. Interested in making a difference with outdoor learning? Visit www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about enrolling in the certification program. Don't miss the chance to expand your teaching toolkit and inspire the next generation with the joy of outdoor education. Thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe to our podcast for more inspiring content. Until next time, keep inspiring young minds.